Welcome to the next edition of Business Law Focus. Great having you with us. Pleasure to welcome Avi Hariprasad, as partner at PKF in Durban. Avi, thanks for joining us. And we obviously having this discussion as tariff turbulence remains a key theme, and it's a key challenge. Every business out there is trying to navigate this, especially the exporters, but everyone is affected, right? And we've got this essentially a new era of trade risk that we all have to navigate. And we wanted to delve into things like the African Growth and Opportunity Act, you know, which is a landmark US trade preference program, been in place since 2000. And it's really benefited so many businesses over the years. Maybe let's just start with a bit of a backdrop on the AGOA, where we stand with it. It's obviously up for review. Where do we go from here?
Firstly, thanks, Evan, for inviting me. I really appreciate the opportunity. Yeah, like you said, you know, we've had the benefit of AGOA for the last 25 years with duty-free access to the U.S. market, and it obviously was a gift that opened doors for export in the automotive, agricultural, and steel industries, just to name a few. But obviously, with this now having to relook at AGOA and whether it will be renewed, and that has come as a bit of a wake-up call for South Africa. South African economy, more specifically. For myself, I personally feel that we didn't use it to build competitiveness and diversify as much as we should have. But with the renewal being uncertain, the stakes are fairly high, in that a rollback would probably hurt some jobs and investment. But it could be a push for South Africa and the African continent to accelerate its regional integration under the African Continental Free Trade Area. Invest in manufacturing and reduce reliance on single markets. I think the single largest lesson to learn at this juncture is probably that preferential access isn't permanent, but competitiveness is.
Brilliant. No, that makes sense. And I know it expired at the end of September, really, and it's created quite a bit of uncertainty. Renewal prospects, are being spoken about, but they're quite complicated. And I know South Africa's also come forward with a framework deal. So I think there is a measure of uncertainty there. And, you know, if we can just look at, you know, in this environment, how do businesses navigate this? And I know at PKF, obviously you are advising a lot of companies. Certain sectors, of course, are effective. You know, automotive, agriculture, steel seem very exposed at this stage.
Yeah, so I think, you know, the economic exposure, the automotive, agricultural, as you mentioned, the steel sectors are exposed in this area. And I think, obviously, for them, they probably will be the hardest hit, rather, from the tariff shock. Some of the ripple effects might lead into the jobs and, obviously, the investment opportunities. I think most of the sectors that are most vulnerable to the tariff shocks are those that are sort of deeply integrated in the global value chains and are heavily reliant on the U.S. market. Some of the least prepared segments are likely to be your smaller, more labor-intensive industries, such as your textiles, your apparel, agro-processing businesses. You know, these sectors often operate with thin margins and lack the scale and diversification to absorb sudden cost increases. The ripple effect could be significant, job losses in the rural and semi-urban areas where these industries are often concentrated. It could also then lead to reduced direct investment and uncertainty, and obviously creates adverse pressures within the economy as well. So over time, this can erode confidence in South Africa, its trade competitiveness, and accelerate capital flight, make it harder for growth and employment.
And of course, there's legal uncertainty as well, right? U.S. political backdrop also creates an interesting environment that needs to be, managed and understood, which is quite difficult at this stage. But what is the creating some of this legal uncertainty at the moment?
So, you know, the U.S. and their tariff measures are obviously being challenged in the American courts and under the Section 301 and 202 of the Trade Act of 1974 in the U.S. 301 typically exempts unfair trade practices by foreign governments that harm the U.S. commerce. And this also includes intellectual property theft, fraud, technology, transfers, discriminatory licensing, and then violations of trade agreements. Obviously, by contrast, Section 202 looks at safeguard measures, And its purpose is to provide temporary relief to the U.S. industry seriously injured or threatened by a surge in imports, even if those imports are fairly traded. So, you know, 301 is punitive, often politically charged, while 202 is protective, and it still is World Trade Organization compliant and as a safeguard. I think South Africa's trade future is increasingly shaped by the U.S. domestic politics rather than economic logic, if you want to call it that. While Sections 301 and 202 are framed as trade remedies, their application often reflects political priorities, from protecting strategic industries to responding to electoral pressures. This obviously implies that decisions on tariffs and preferences can hinge less on comparative advantage and more on geopolitical alignment, labor concerns, even campaign narratives. Therefore, I think for South Africa, it creates a layer of unpredictability. Compliance with the Goa criteria and World Trade Organization norms may not guarantee the stability that we look for due to the political sentiments and the shifts. So the risk that trade policies become a proxy for broader diplomatic and ideological debates does make long-term planning for exporters and investors alike far more complex.
As far as risk mitigation goes, diversification, is that an option?
Diversification definitely is an option, something that we should be looking at and looking at other markets, the EU, BRICS, the free trade area in the African continent. Just the African continent free trade area in itself is one of the world's largest free trade areas by number of countries, bringing together approximately 54 nations. And in a single market of about 1.3 to 1.4 billion people, which should actually be capitalized on. I mean, the core objectives there is to eliminate tariffs, boost inter-Africa trade, create regional value chains, and enable trade services, investment, and digital commerce. So inter-African trade is currently less than 16% of total trade. And there's obviously a heightened sort of emphasis, and it highlights significant growth potential in this area. Obviously, one would have to look at the key hurdles that need to be addressed, in such as infrastructure gaps and customs inefficiencies, slow political harmonization, and the like. And if we have to look at diversifying towards the EU and BRICS, there are some challenges that need to be looked at in the short to medium term, from a structural and policy perspective. And then once we actually address these issues, it does create opportunity for diversification. And some of the issues that we probably have to look at in short to medium term is obviously trade facilitation, as an example, to streamline custom procedures and reduce non-tariff barriers to make cross-border trade faster and cheaper. You know, export incentive, introduce rebate schemes and tax credits for firms entering new markets, market intelligence and promotion, and, you know, access to information, which makes cross-market investments much easier, digital platforms which allow export councils to provide real-time market data and requirements across the world. You know, some of the other challenges obviously include standard alignments that we'll have to look at. If you take the EU, for example, one would have to focus on the technical and sanitary standards while harmonizing the rules of origin within Africa to unlock the value chain potential.
Of course, those companies that don't get it right, my understanding is that they would face most favored nation tariffs under standard WTO rules. And for many industries, this could mean much higher duties, right? I mean, what if you don't get it right, what could some industries face?
Well, like we said, you know, you don't get this right. Some of the industries, as we mentioned, the automotive and agricultural and that, there would be challenges, because if they're not able to pivot and obviously operate within the world space and are heavily hinged on a single market, there could be loss of employment and loss of investment and obviously competitive advantage in South Africa. But with that being said, I mean, one would think that there's some economical logic that's applied to these issues, in that we are one of the higher producers of fruit and precious metals and the like.
So who will the winners be in this new tariff world?
I suppose the winners in the new tariff world, if we have to look at it, are probably those entities that have real-time data access. They have agile supply chains, they're diversified in markets and those kind of things. And if you have to look at some of those markets and probably some of those companies, if you take just the automotive, we've mentioned that a few times. If you take our automotive sector, it still remains the cornerstone of the export economy. And it does lead OEMs like BMW South Africa and Ford South Africa to make changes and set the pace and resilience in this area. These firms themselves have heavily invested in advanced planning systems and predictive analytics, multi-sourcing strategies to mitigate against this. So the ability to pivot production and manage global supply has become much easier with the advancements in technology. Similarly, if you look at your agriculture and agri-tech, one of the companies that comes to mind is Aerobotics. They specialize in AI and drone technology for crop monitoring and transforming farming into data-driven enterprises. You know, this combination of market diversification and precision in agricultural positions in Africa and agricultural sector makes it a very steady player. Going into like mining and minerals, Anglo American, Impala Platinum, they've also been embracing digital transformation to remain competitive. Obviously, quite topical in the world space is green supply chain initiatives and becoming a standard, ensuring compliance with global sustainability norms and enhancing transparency. With global demand for critical minerals like platinum and manganese, these companies are leveraging on technology quite heavily to secure their place in the ever-evolving value chain.
Well, Avi, thanks very much for providing some guidance in this fast-moving, very uncertain environment. Great having you on the show.
Thank you so much, Evan, and thank you for having me once again.